Welcome to Season 7, Episode 23 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Wednesday, 3rd of September, and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and the Ubuntu community. If you're listening live, you can send us messages in the chat thing on the website and in the hash UUPC IRC channel. I'm Alan, and joining me this week is Laura and Mark.
I'm not here yet.
Yes, you are.
Keep talking.
Hello!
Oh, my gosh. Mark, how are you?
I'm quite well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good. How are you, Laura?
Good, thank you. A bit confused.
So this is, how many episodes have you done of this with the desk and stuff?
This is my third time lucky.
And different things have gone wrong every time,
yeah,
haven't they?
Yeah, pretty much.
Excellent.
Yeah. You never saw me do cinema projection, did you?
No, was it as shambolic as this?
Well, to be fair, we had to switch sockets.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. Are you talking about projection or?
No, tonight.
Right.
Things weren't working, so we had to do some debug.
This is what happens when we're running with old equipment that we've borrowed and stolen from Tony.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I put the right slider up normally.
Right.
It's just if I was
plugged into that socket, yeah. Which I'm not. But yeah, Mark, how are you then?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. Yeah. I'm not so tired this week, so I might be able to read things.
Ah,
that'll
yes.
be nice, won't it?
That was well received last time.
Was it?
I think, yeah,
good.
By me at least. Yes. So, should we get on with it?
Let's.
Now it's time for some news. So Google researchers have published a paper on their Knowledge Vault project, a system to better understand information on the web and the connections between it.
Interesting. Is it?
Mm. I don't know. It's
what is it?
Is it yet another gigantic database that Google have with lots of data in it?
Yeah, and it's supposed to link things together so you can ask it questions and it can work out answers, which sounds a bit like Wolfram Alpha.
Is this? Oh, it's
What's
not like.
That?
Well, it's talking about. So it says information on the web, not necessarily information about the web.
No. So it's looking at stuff that's on the web and other knowledge bases that exist, and then trying to connect it all together and understand what it means in context.
Okay, so you could do correlations between people who drive Vauxhall cars and the population of penguins at the South Pole, or something like that. That the kind of stupid stuff that people do with Wolfram Alpha.
What?
What's Wolfram Alpha?
I thought that was like the primary use of Wolfram Alpha was to come up with weird.
Oh no,
like,
I do it for doing
sets.
Things like binary to decimal conversion.
Wow, all the power of the cloud for you to turn binary to decimal.
Wolfram Alpha is a computational knowledge engine,
right?
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's a thing that like recognizes. So you'd be surprised what it can recognize as. Natural language processing,
yeah,
or something.
So you can type in things like "What year did Michael Jackson die?" and it will work out what and give you show you its interpretation of the question and find Michael Jackson, find when he died, and give you the date.
Rather than just searching for that as a string on a page, which effectively is what Google does.
It tries to do it a bit more meaningfully.
Yeah. Well, let's see what they do with this information anyway. Moving on.
A Kickstarter campaign has been launched for Operating System U, a Linux distribution based on Manjaro, with a focus on customizability. The campaign has compared OSU to Windows 8, citing its traditional desktop environment, lack of viruses and low costs as advantages over Windows 8. And it also compares itself to Ubuntu, claiming that Ubuntu's desktop environment feels more suited to a phone or tablet, and that Ubuntu's time-based releases may give system performance a hit due to driver updates not being as frequent.
Right, okay.
I'm interested to see if they've actually got anything to back that up.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I mean, is this a known thing that having a time-based release can mean that you fall behind on driver updates and that causes problems?
If you speak to a gamer, they would probably say yes, because they'd say frames per second is king and the archive is frozen and therefore won't get an update to my Nvidia driver, and so I'm missing out on fragging my friends, that kind of thing. Yeah,
okay. Although you're probably using the proprietary NVIDIA driver downloaded from NVIDIA's website, aren't you?
Well, no, because we ship it in the archive.
Oh, do you?
I mean, you could do that, but we'd actually actively try and discourage you doing that. So, yeah, you could say that a rolling distro has an advantage in that particular one use case that would have newer drivers for a particular piece of hardware, perhaps.
Fair enough.
What's interesting about this thing is being crowdfunded.
Yes.
They're asking for $50,000. So far, at the time of writing, they've got 17 days to go and they've raised $1,000.
Okay.
So they've got a bit of a way to go.
So are there any nice perks?
Well, it depends on your definition of nice.
Any interesting perks?
There is one for some of the lower ones. Are like, you know, we'll have a hangout together, or a phone call or something like that. But then there's T-shirts and all the usual. And then it goes up to... a laptop.
Ooh.
Which they call U-Book Go. Yeah. It's basically a fairly low-end... it's kind of comparable to a very low-end Ultrabook, Netbook kind of hybrid, like a Chromebook, really.
Like a Chromebook kind of thing,
performance-wise,
right.
Yeah. Looking at the specs... it doesn't look, you know, particularly stellar, but I think this is part of the motivation for them is to make an OS that goes on this particular machine.
Yeah.
So probably would be tailored for that. It's interesting because this first came up a month or two ago, and the guy running it, he's quite a young guy, 17 years old, and he came in for a lot of stick from various places because he claimed that they were doing certain things that they weren't, and claimed that they were talking to people they weren't, and made lots of lofty claims, but... we'll have to see how that pans out.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced they'll reach their 50,000. It seems they'll fall a bit short, but hopefully they'll carry on and develop whatever they're going to do with or without the funding.
Mm.
In other news, Twitter have made available to users their analytics tool, not just available to those who are paying for adverts. The tools track impressions, that's views, and engagements, that's clicks, for each of your tweets, so you can see how popular different types of posts are. You can also see statistics about your followers and other people they follow. The tool starts recording analytics from the first time you load it. It doesn't go back in history.
Well, mine does.
Really? Mine didn't. On any
how
of
far back does yours go?
Don't know, a while. Because the work account that I've managed, I looked and that didn't. So from the point where I logged in, then that day it started.
But your personal one did.
My personal one already had them.
Have you ever paid for an advert on Twitter?
No.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
But the reason I went to look was because I'd seen somebody else tweeting about the fact that around Christmas something went up or down or whatever, and she was quite curious about it. So I was like, oh, that's just, she's got historical, and I did too, but I didn't look how far.
Yeah, mine only goes back a week.
Yeah.
Which is not very far. And it shows you, you know, how many people are, you know, tweeting, retweeting your stuff, and how many people are clicking through your links and stuff, which I guess is because they have the URL shortener, so they know exactly who's clicking on whose tweets.
I quite like the page. It's really clean and easy to follow, and they've got little hover things explaining what impressions are and things.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to read than Google Analytics.
that's
just a minefield.
It's
I've never
awful.
Figured that out. Yeah.
But Twitter Analytics, I was quite impressed with.
So what is the goal, I guess, you know, to see which of your tweets, if you're, I can imagine how this is useful to someone who has a brand to manage and wants to maximize their engagement and impressions on their brand. But for you and me, you know,
It's a tool for becoming obsessive about Twitter.
Yeah. I mean, I tweet a picture of my cat. I don't really care if lots of people clicked it or see it.
Did somebody famous once click it though?
What?
Somebody famous once click a picture of your cat.
No.
Not shared a picture of your cat.
No, it was... what's that guy who everybody hates who used to edit The Mirror?
Oh, Piers Morgan.
Piers Morgan. Yeah, it was him that tweeted something.
Oh, no, that was one of your, like, joke.popey.com or something.
Oh, yeah, that was it. Yeah, he tweeted joke.popey.com.
Oh, no, it was Saucer of Milk.
Yeah, one of it. Oh, yeah, it was. Yeah, it was handbag.popey.com. No.
It was, milk. Was it milk?
No, it was meow.popey.com.
There you go.
Yeah. I suddenly saw the hits on that skyrocket. But yeah, but I don't care.
We're just it's giving funny, our listeners an insight into Alan's DNS.
Subdomains. So,
I guess,
why would you want this?
I guess from Twitter's point of view, there is the possibility people get more obsessive about it.
Yeah, or they but, see that this is available and it draws them in to think, oh, maybe if I promoted that tweet. Yeah.
Or maybe if I had higher quality tweets, people might...
Exactly. If I tweet about this, then these people retweet it. But so I want to impress those people.
Yeah, but from Twitter's perspective, they're not losing anything by making it free to normal people.
I'm more thinking, how is this useful to me? Why would I go there other than, you know, the, like, I used to like look at the karma that I had on Launchpad and think, ha, I have more karma than anyone, but it didn't actually my life any better.
Are you on clout?
Yeah, maybe this is for the kind of people who care about clout, so that Twitter doesn't have to let external developers do stuff like that with their API. They just say, oh, well, that stuff already exists, so go away.
Interesting.
Possibly.
Again, it's easier to follow than clout.
Well, clout I blocked.
I actually deleted my account on
ridiculous.
Clout.
Yes.
Twice.
Moving on.
I can't see. Snap deal. Sold out. Not in black.
Scroll down
a tiny bit.
Couldn't reach. Tony's microphone's too high. So snapdeal.com selling the Intex Cloud FX phone, which features Firefox OS, and they're selling it for about 2,000 rupees, which is 20 quid.
Wow. That's cheap for a phone.
Yeah. Yep.
It's got a 3.5-inch screen. How's that compare to what we've got?
My iPhone's 4.
Okay.
My Nexus 4 is 4 and a bit, I think.
Okay. Yeah. And it's got a 1 gigahertz processor and two SIM card slots.
Yeah, that's really popular outside the UK.
Yeah.
I know it's really, really popular in China and in India and many other countries.
Because, I think, I don't know how true it is. I read about a thing in India, most people have, like, SIM cards on several different networks because it's cheaper to do that so that you can call your friends on the network they're on rather than doing cross network calls, which costs a lot more money.
Right. That does make sense.
Yeah.
One of my co-workers has a dual SIM phone and he uses one SIM because he's got a good deal on voice calls and the other SIM, he's got a good deal on data. Yeah. So,
I could certainly see it being useful, like, you know, if you're going abroad, you have your traveling SIM with a decent sort of roaming plan.
Right, and you can still receive phone calls on your other SIM because you've still got that SIM in the phone. Yeah, that makes sense. So, obviously the headline for this is it's very cheap.
Yeah, it's a 20 quid smartphone.
And Firefox Snapdeal, the people who are distributing it in India, have sold out of the white version, but you can still buy the black one.
It appears so, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cheap. And there's been lots of press about this I've seen various Mozilla people retweeting photos of full-page adverts in Indian newspapers and articles and stuff like that. So
cool.
Yeah, good luck to them.
Yep.
And in other Mozilla news, they've now rolled out sponsored tiles feature, which we mentioned before, on the Firefox Nightly channel. So if you download a nightly build of Firefox, it'll have this sponsored tiles thing if you don't have any other history when you open a new tab.
So this is definitely not adverts. This is
inclusion tiles.
That's the one.
How often do you not have any recent history?
When you first install.
So, for example, Safari, forever, as far as I'm aware, when you first install Safari, not that anyone ever would install Safari, but if you've got a Mac and you want to install another browser, the first thing you do is open Safari and you get smacked in the face with, you know, Amazon, New York Times, eBay, you know, very, very high profile, very popular web properties. And I'm sure there's some deal going on there that puts those front and center in a new install of Safari. And now Firefox has the same thing effectively. And it does make sense to me. I think it's a sensible idea because when you first open your browser, you just get this big pane of white or you get an about page or... Yeah. Google search. And for Mozilla, it doesn't make sense for them to put all their eggs in the Google basket. It makes sense for them to have multiple sources of revenue.
Yes.
And if they're being paid to put those tiles there, so long as they're not to the detriment of what Mozilla are fighting for, the open web, and they're not degrading the browser as a result, it's not going to, like, when you look away, flick back to that or something, you know, so do something nefarious, which I doubt that would happen, but
and you can turn it off.
Yeah, that's the other thing. And the other thing is you can just open a tab and visit another website. As soon as you visit another website, all the things disappear. Yeah. Mm. So, I mean, I wouldn't see it very often because I have a set of tabs that open when I open my browser. So, you know, it's only there when you see it when you open a new tab.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Seems like a sane idea anyway. Moving on, Munich councillors have refuted claims that they're to switch back to Microsoft products following comments from the city's deputy mayor. Yay. Once a councillor who ran...
That should have said one.
One councillor who is also an IT professional dismissed the deputy mayor's comments as an irrelevant opinion of a lawyer. I like that. Another said of the council's open source system, there has always been criticism, but in the field of IT, that's nothing special. So yes, not a story is basically what they're saying.
Hooray, moving on then.
Moving on.
And a group of celebrities have reportedly had nude photos of themselves leaked online after they were stolen using an exploit in Apple's iCloud. But then I read something that said it wasn't. Well, Apple said it wasn't an exploit in their iCloud.
Well, I guess it depends how you define exploit.
Yeah.
If you define exploit as there was a bug, you know, you could insert certain characters and then get into someone's account.
That sounds like an exploit.
Sounds like an exploit. But what?
Well, that was an exploit, but they analysed it and think that's not what caused this stuff to get out.
All right. It's interesting because there's lots of conjecture about whether it was people brute forcing the iCloud, the Find My Phone sign-in process. Because the Find My Phone sign-in process apparently doesn't have a number of retries. This was the alleged suggestion. But there's lots of analysis of this, but it's very difficult to tell until Apple and FBI look into it.
The thing I find interesting, I mean, my first thought when I saw this was, I hate to, you know, shoulder you with this mental image, but if I was to take naked photos of myself, me and my partner, I would, you know, put them on some sort of encrypted medium offline in a drawer in my house.
That's because you know about this stuff.
But then, so I thought, well, if you were taking these photos, why would you put them on iCloud? But then it was pointed out to me that if you take a photo on your iPhone, it automatically gets synced to your devices via iCloud.
And you don't realise it's
And you don't think about it.
And the same thing happens on Android. If you use Google Plus, it syncs your photos up to Google Plus. So, there's a lot of convenience versus security.
Yeah.
That, you know.
But one of them, I actually learnt about an awful lot of celebrities I'd never heard of before.
Got to see a lot about a lot of the celebrities. I didn't.
But Mary Elizabeth, somebody who had some photos of her with a husband that they'd taken years and years ago and had actually deleted. That was the sort of a bit more creepy because somebody had actually gone to the trouble of undeleting them or there was a copy somewhere.
Well, I've had an iPhone and an iPad, and if you delete them off the local device, it only deletes them off that device.
And not
off the other device.
That could
It could well be that they're just still in the cloud because they're not being deleted off of every device.
Or it could just be a different device.
A backup which is stored in the cloud and they've deleted it and the person accessed the backup.
Yes.
Finally, gaming news, Mark.
Hardware manufacturer MSI has released its X99S Gaming 7 motherboard.
Wow.
Stating among its features that it's SteamOS ready out of the box, which is quite cool in a way because it's a hardware manufacturer saying we support a Linux OS.
Yeah, they could just write Debian ready out of the box.
Well, this is the thing, right? You see... My desktop's motherboard runs SteamOS out of the box. It didn't have to do anything. Do they mean that it can run SteamOS, or do they mean that all of the software that comes bundled with the motherboard, which is going to be stuff like drivers for overclocking because it's a gaming motherboard, does that mean that that's all going to be supported on SteamOS, or they just mean it won't like explode if you try and install Debian on it?
I guess it's just the same as making sure that the thing actually, you know, can boot from a Linux environment and, you know, runs okay. I don't think they will have done that much special it's not like there is a SteamOS yet, not like there's a SteamOS certification process. I'm sure there will be, but there isn't at the moment. I find it interesting that they're using that as a selling point.
Yeah.
Because, you know, gamers, at the moment you can't buy SteamOS boxes, Steam machines, official branded Steam machines, can you? And so what people are doing is they're downloading the SteamOS ISO and they're building their own. because that's what gamers do. They build their own, you know, they put the whatever video card they want, the CPU, the cooling, and all that kind of stuff that they want themselves. And so when you're browsing through a shopping, you know, a shopping cart, and there's one that says SteamOS out the box, if you're planning on building a Steam box for your lounge, that's an absolute winner, isn't it?
It is an absolute winner. But then you could just do it on any PC motherboard. You could just put that there, and it would be pretty much true.
Right, and I'm sure there's plenty of little bullet points on, you know, on motherboards boxes that are true of every motherboard.
Okay,
you know,
yeah, fair point.
It's you know, it's just a marketing thing, really. It's like a, you know, any one of those logos that you see stamped on any product you buy.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the end of the news.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that enthralls, exasperates, or elevates you, tweet at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. Please do get in touch. I mean it. Just one message, just to know there's someone out there who cares.
Thanks, Tony. And now, community news. And Didier Roche has blogged about the Ubuntu Developer Tool Center, a utility for setting up development environments on Ubuntu with initial support for developing Android apps.
Hmm. Yeah, he wrote a blog post, and the desktop team engineering manager said, "Hey, Alan, can you spread this around the social world to, you know, let people know about Didier's blog post?" So I tweeted it from the @Ubuntu Twitter account and killed Didier's server because I didn't realize that Didier was running his blog off of a Raspberry Pi. So it's like thousands of people clicking that link and killed his poor little server. So he had to move that to very probably to be a static page somewhere else. It was like on IRC, I heard him just go, "I think I need to look at Cloudflare." I was like, "No, anything other than a Raspberry Pi would probably be okay." Anyway, he's blogged Ubuntu Loves Developers because it's something he's been working on for a couple of months, and it's really quite cool. It's just a little tool. And you run it, and it goes and gets all the necessary bits and bobs if you wanted to develop Android apps on Ubuntu. And they're going to add additional like developer profiles later.
Is the idea that it focuses on like technologies? Or so say there would be one for PHP development, one for Ruby development, or would it be more like there'd be one for, say, Drupal development and one for like Moodle development and one for whatever?
I'm not sure, actually. I mean, the initial one being Android, you could imagine... So the target is to make it easy for developers to use Ubuntu as their development platform, right?
Yes.
And so one of the problems with developing for Android is going and getting all the tools and, you know,
the
installing
them
all. All of that, which you just shouldn't have to worry about.
It's not that hard.
Well, no, it's not.
No, but it's, you know, it's something you have to do when what you've got in your head is, I want to write some code, and what you've got to do is... find all the dependencies, install the development libraries, find out what I need, why isn't it working? Yeah, all of that.
So, and the idea is that this will go and get the latest version of whatever you need for that, whatever developer activity you're doing.
Right.
And it's just, it's quite nice and clean. I tried it on my laptop and I just ran UTDC Android, pressed enter, and it just props up the license agreement from Google. So it goes and gets the right license agreement, shows it to you, you go, yes. And then 0 to 100%, and it's done. It was like, nice. That was easy.
Cool. What's next, Alan?
Daniel Holbach has announced a new community team mailing list.
Mm. Cool.
So, because we realised that a mistake was made recently when we were scheduling a community event, in that we were all talking about it inside Canonical. And then we said, yeah, that looks like a good date. And then we announced it, and then realised it clashes with some other important community event, and someone in our community said, "Hey, you realize that's the same date as, you know, some other event that I want to go to, so I'm going to miss out." And we're like, we made a mistake there. So we figured, why don't we have a community mailing list where we can discuss these kind of things and say, "Hey, look, we're going to do this event, this is weekend, you know, anyone know anything else going on?" So we can like plan better, but also other kind of community related discussions, you know, anything really goes on that. Not anything goes, you know. But all the community team are on it, and loads of people from outside Canonical on the community have joined it as well.
Oh, cool. There's an apt and yum repository now available for trying out Bleeding Edge Monaur packages fresh from the continuous integration system.
Yeah, it's a blog post from Joe Shields, who we've interviewed in the past about Mono stuff. He left Collabra recently and went to work for Xamarin. And he is tasked with keeping all the Mono packages in shape on Linux.
Cool.
Because mostly Xamarin work on Windows and Mac Mono packages. Right. So for developers on Windows and Mac, so he's working on the Linux packages, which is great news.
And we have an event. It is, of course, OggCamp on the 4th and 5th of October at the Oxford Hotel in Oxford. It's a
free excellent.
Yes. It's a free culture on conference. You can go to ogcamp.org for information and tickets. I'd like to briefly mention our sponsors, Ubuntu.
Yes.
Ooh.
Supported by Canonical.
Yes.
And Linux Voice, ooh, the magazine that gives back to the free software community.
That's awesome.
And, of course, the OggCamp community.
Yay!
That's great. I remember talking to Graham Morrison at OggCamp last year, in fact, when they just announced that he was leaving Linux Format and that they were going to do something. And he wasn't going to do something. Well, no, but the people who'd left were going to do something. No, not him, because that would be contractually awkward for him. But so we were discussing this over a pint, and then it all, you know, comes around that this year they've actually got to the point where they're publishing a magazine and they're sponsoring us.
Yeah, and they're going to be there as well.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Manning a stand. And we have some speakers confirmed for the scheduled track. We have Andrew Katz, who is going to be talking about open hardware licensing.
Cool.
We have Damon Hart Davis, who's going to be talking about OpenTRV, which is a home heating automation project, which is open hardware. And they're going to be exhibiting as well and selling kits and probably doing a workshop as well to solder the kits up together. We have
soldering at OggCamp. It's a tradition.
Oh, yes.
It is now.
We might not have to do it in the car park this time.
Getting kicked outside for fire regulations.
We have friend of the show, Stuart Langridge, who's going to be talking about developing Riddling and other mobile games on multiple platforms.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be good.
And we have Emma Jane Westby, who is going to be talking about social coding and like ownership and stuff.
Awesome.
I should have written a snappier thing.
She does
for
a
that.
Lot of Got stuff with GitHub and things, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does stuff with GitHub and Drupal, and yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. And I know. Emma had a collision, another event going on that weekend, so I'm quite glad that she's managed to get to OggCamp.
Yes.
That's good.
Yes. We've got some exhibitors as well confirmed. We have OpenTRV, who I just mentioned, R-Lab, which is the Reading Hackspace. We have the Surrey and Hampshire Hackspace.
Wow.
We have Peppertop Comics, which is, if you've seen Linux Voice, there's a comic strip in there called LV. So this is the guy who does that comic.
He's
going to be there selling merchandise to fund the hosting and doing of the comics that they do.
The doing of the comics.
The doing, yes. And the Oxhack, which is the Oxford Hackspace, and the Swindon Hackspace also have a stand, and the Thames Valley RepRap user group.
Oh, excellent. So we're going to see 3D printers again.
Yes, so they were at Farnham before the RepRap user group existed.
Is that two years ago?
It was sort of 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Have we done 2 years in Liverpool?
The 2 days in Liverpool.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, it was good.
Cool. So they're going to be there. And I think that's all we've got time for. Go to oldcamp.org to find out more. I forgot to mention something. We're probably also going to have some sort of code club, code pub thing going on around OggCamp. We're not quite sure when yet, but details will emerge.
Oh, excellent. Well, that's all for episode 23. We'll be back next week when we'll be discussing communities and why they suck and other things as well. So we'll see you then. If you're listening live, keep listening.
You gotta keep talking.
Oh, do I?
Yeah.
Yada, yada, yada. Blah, blah, blah.
You can stop now.
Okay.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.